Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another edition of What's on the Other Side. Filling in for Drake Jones again, I'm Max Schumacher. Rodney Johnson will be joining us momentarily. And actually, he's on the line now. We'll go ahead and get right to him. How's it going, Rodney? And it appears we've lost Rodney, but we'll see if he calls back. But we have another caller on the line, and we will get Rodney in real quick again. How's it going, Rodney?
Hey, Max. Doing great. Good to be on, and looking forward to the show. And I did talk to Drake a little bit, and he should be back here before long, so we'll have our host back, and we can go on from there. But I thought that was a few subjects we might talk about tonight, so we'll get into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know some of the things you were talking to me about were the prehistoric creatures, particularly, we could talk about that one quite a bit, and the Hollow Earth theories and everything.
Yeah.
Was there any one specific theory you were wanting to talk about or any new developments?
Well, you know, I thought we would do a what-if question on the future of Area 51. That was one of our third topics. But I figured that if we could, you know, expound a little bit on what we already kind of know about it, and, you know, from the 60s and 70s, and there have been people working there, you know, for decades now, what could they possibly be working on now and in the future, say another 10, 15 years down the road? I'm pretty positive that, you know, things are going on that are already well beyond what the secular public would consider, you know, amazing. But I'm sure they're, you know, like I said, in the future or even now, have already surpassed what most people would think of as normal technology. We talked a little bit about, you know, before on one of our shows about what we thought, you know, Area 51 might be containing as far as you know, some of the other documentaries that have come out on it and what really they could be working on now. Now, of course, mainstream media and stuff is all about, you know, let's just say that it's technology and it's just secret warplanes and stealth bombers that we're working on. We don't want anybody to see and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, there's been a lot of other people and a lot of other speculations, and it's really been a great topic for a lot of people. And it can go into other areas as well, but you know, the recent re-release of documentaries and stuff like that are always quite interesting. But I'm more concerned with power supplies and, you know, zero point energy and things like that, where, you know, certain describers had, you know, people that have come out and said that they saw power sources like that there, and so it could go in a lot of different, you know, directions. And as far as the Hollow Earth theory, that's been around for a long time. You know, subterranean caves and giant openings, and that would go all the way back to Hitler, you know, and the South Pole. Where I was going to say, and then the prehistoric creatures that are still living today, there have been evidences of fish caught in the ocean that were thought to be extinct. And if those fish were still alive from prehistoric ages, then that would suggest that there may be others as well. And so I really think that, you know, Loch Ness Monster and all these other things, the recent reports on TV about the Megalodon and these other prehistoric sharks, what I suggest is that because of the ocean temperature changing, that these habitats are changing as well, which would then, you know, create a situation where, you know, these creatures' food supply might be coming closer to the surface because of how warm the water is. And then that would then lead these other creatures that we haven't seen for maybe possibly hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years, coming to the surface where they could be viewed. There's been camera, actual camera footage of some of these creatures and stuff. And, you know, the ocean is completely unexplored. Well, not completely unexplored, but for the most part, certainly there are things that we wouldn't be able to explain if we could just take a magnifying glass and say, you know, and completely, you know, took away the ocean and looked at every creature that was there. I'm sure we would find some very, very fascinating stuff, if not even just fascinating prehistoric creatures, but possible other subterranean structures that humanity had built a long time ago. That's another discussion that we've had on other programs about, you know, they're finding these, you know, really intricate type of building structures that are several hundred feet under the ocean. And the last time the ocean was that low was more than 10,000 years ago. But science and schools tell us that, oh, yeah, well, humanity didn't have any eruption or any kind of, you know, things going on like that at that time. But we, you know, are finding this out now. And like I said, it seems like somebody has this idea just to keep it simple and not let people kind of, you know, postulate on the fact that, you know, people were building with great, you know, care and precision and technology,
right,
probably 15, 20, 25,000 years ago. And nobody really wants to talk about that for some reason. So I thought those three subjects could really lead into some other things as well. So I didn't have any actual new news. I didn't have a chance to really look up any news stories these days, but I had a couple of hits on the new UFO website that, you know, tells you pretty much any breaking news. But apparently there's two new news articles up on that. I thought we might cover that on Sunday.
Yeah, excuse me, I'm starting to lose my voice a little bit here, but yeah, starting with Area 51, you'd mentioned, you know, what's going on there, what was going on there, the future, everything like that. I definitely think, you know, it's always brought up in the media, UFOs, planes, the Air Force testing, everything kind of related to that. I think that probably is still the case, probably, that it is military testing going on there. But there's something to be said about the secrecy of it, because it's still going on. They actually had just seized a bunch of land from a family out there that had been battling with them since the 60s. I can't remember how many acres they own, but, you know, they're obviously still very interested in keeping it a secret. So whatever technology is in there, it's always that question everyone wants to know. But I'm kind of on the same boat as you. I don't necessarily think it's some over-the-top alien, you know, technology, you know, groundbreaking thing that we don't know about or we can't know about. It certainly probably wouldn't be located in an area like that that's been hyped up and has so much publicity in the media behind it. So that's just my general take on it. You know, as far as the future, you got to wonder, it's kind of in an area in the middle of nowhere, and I think that's great, but there's only probably so much testing they can actually do because it's you know, in the middle of the United States, there's not a whole lot of area that they can go do what they want to do. If this were in the middle of the Sahara Desert or something, that might be a different story. But it's, you know, we'll see. It's never really a big – you can type in Area 51 news. You never really hear anything. I did hear recently they banned people from flying drones anywhere pretty much near them. They're going to start shooting down people's hobby drones. I'm surprised that they haven't done that already, but – I guess anyone, if you're out there, don't try and fly a drone. You'll probably never get it back. But, hey, I see we have a caller on the line right now. I'll go ahead and bring them into the discussion and get right to them. And how's it going?
Hello, it's Alex. How are you guys doing?
Alex. No, good, good. Just talking about some of the things about Area 51 that they might be working on now or possibly in the future, because of that Bob Lazar documentary came out and people were sort of disappointed in it because he only kind of reiterated what he had sort of already let out before, and people were thinking that it was going to be all this new information and it wasn't really anything new. And so, you know, not just discredit his story or anything, but it seems that, you know, either he's got a cap or, you know, obviously, you know, he's not necessarily doing it for money, but maybe for posterity or population or you know, popularity or something like that. But it seems to me that it's possible that it could be both, that they could have some sort of back engineering going on. But for the most part, the people that work there, you know, they go there in secrecy. And as far as the airspace goes, what, you know, Matt was talking about earlier was that, yeah, there's a no-fly zone. And they also had expanded their base range a while back, several decades ago, too. So now they're even taking over more property, and there's no way you can really fight that. Obviously, they tried, but you can fly in a drone over there. They have sensors and stuff on the ground that can detect body heat and noise and all these other things. So whatever it is, it's highly secret. But we talked about before about really if you were going to have something that is top secret or some sort of, you know, extraterrestrial technology, you probably wouldn't have it there simply because, you know, I mean, it is a high-profile area. And anything flying around, you can still see within hundreds of miles if it has lights on it or anything like that. So what about possible invisible technology? I know that we've got that pretty much now in, you know, in certain materials that they can do, which basically sort of makes it kind of like a mirage. And, you know, as far as Area 51 goes, we haven't heard any real new news coming out of there. We had Roger the Skywatcher, who was out there at the Little Alien Inn, and he would call in once in a while talking about a few things. But we haven't heard any new information about Area 51 lately. That's kind of why I wanted to bring it up, because, you know, other than military technology with stealth planes, what's really the big deal? Why are the huge runways that, you know, are so long that, you know, you don't need runways quite that big or quite that long for conventional aircraft? So why are they still adding on hangars? And then there's the you know, all these other areas where they have underground installations inside of mountains and caves and things. And I can imagine if you were a scientist or an engineer and you were working in one of these places and you had absolute, you know, secrecy, you were told not to say anything about it or whatever, you probably would. You're going to get paid and do all that. But what happened, you know, before was that some previous workers at Area 51 had came out and were trying to file a suit against Area 51 because they had gotten ill, because all the stuff that they were working on, they wouldn't dispose of it properly like me and you would have to. They would go out in the desert and set these caustic materials on fire, and people got sick, and they tried to sue them, you know, for, you know, ailments. And they could never get anywhere because it's such a top-secret place that they could do whatever they want. And they can go out there and you know, just burn or bury whatever they want in total secrecy. And that may be against, you know, the laws of our own government as far as that goes. So, Alex, what do you think about, you know, that as far as the fact that they are above the law? I mean, doesn't that throw up some red flags?
I believe, you know, all that stuff about Area 51. It's probably going on a lot of places. I mean, every country probably has their Area 51. But what I wanted to say, when you guys said that there wasn't any breaking news, there is some really cool breaking news going around right now. We have just discovered gravitational waves. It was the last part of Einstein's theory, was that these things exist, and we just now proved it. I mean, they found out in September, but they just addressed it at the scientific something, whatever, but we now know the wavelength of gravity and know that they have an effect on the universe. And so where that goes, I don't know. Did Area 51 already know about these wavelengths and stuff? Maybe, maybe not. Either way, that's new technology that's about to spark a whole different kind of revolution. Because, I mean, when we discovered radio waves and other different types of X-rays, I mean, look what all we did with that, and look what we did with radio, and now we have gravity waves. I mean, for me, I see a really cool future ahead coming from that, you know, kind of Area 51-ish stuff that's going to start coming out to the public, and maybe a better form of internet, and who knows, really, it's really limitless with gravity and all that stuff. So,
could that be a possible mode of communication using gravity waves, you know? I mean, like we do with radio waves and other things, is that a possibility, you think?
I think it's really a possibility of transportation, in my opinion. So, like, that would be a way of communication to transport a voice, but more or less to transport objects and stuff like that. If you know the frequency in which gravity is tuned to, and you can start to manipulate it and do weird things. I mean, we have wireless frequency and wireless magnetics and all that type of stuff, but that's working off more fundamental things than this gravity, which is just always there and everywhere you go. So, yeah, it's a pretty cool thing. And, you know, I'm sure this is like some of the stuff that they've been developing in Area 51 behind the scenes and not telling anybody about. And I don't even know why they actually put out there that they discovered gravitational waves, unless they're to the point where they've already figured out everything that they can do with it and they know how to control it now. so they're okay with the public knowing about it? Or maybe just these labs, they didn't know these labs knew, and until the press conference the other day when they put it out there to the public, there was just rumor of it. So I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, well, let's expound on that a little bit, because we've already got maglev trains and certain other things that work off of magnetics. We also had our last discussion about Coral Castle, and that he was saying that he knew the secrets of the pyramids, and basically what he was doing was apparently finding the resonant frequency of these objects and then bombarding them with that same frequency, and then that negates gravity somehow, at least partially. That doesn't allow you to move it anywhere, but maybe it would float enough that you could just push it with your finger. Because if it was free floating, then it would be easy to move. It's like something underwater. You wouldn't have any resistance. And so that's really what I think we're talking about here is the fact that if we could find the resonant frequency of any, you know, object, we should be able to manipulate those waves and create a nullifying effect within the object itself by simply overwhelming it and bombarding with its frequency. And that's the same thing when somebody sings really high and they shatter a piece of glass. Basically what they're doing is finding that resonant frequency of the glass and sustaining that pitch for a certain amount of time, which creates a vibration in the glass and causes it to shatter. Now, we don't want to be shattering things. We want to actually move them. So is it possible to maybe bombard these things too much? Or it's the same thing with the biblical story, you know, like the walls of Jericho. When they marched around the city 7 times or for 7 days, and basically they blew these horns. Well, maybe these horns are actually some sort of technical device that was part of the Ark of the Covenant, which was stolen out of Egypt when they fled. So they probably had this power, and what they did is just bombarded the walls, these stone walls, granite or whatever they might have been, with these horns, and it caused them to fall down eventually. And that's not really explained in detail in the biblical text, but I really think that is something that the ancients probably had, or at least partially, maybe, you know, not widespread or anything, but those kind of stories, I think, can relate to what we're talking about now. And if they're starting to, you know, get into these gravity waves, and if they can measure them, what kind of machine or device do you need then to find these resonant gravity frequency waves, and whether they would even let the public know exactly, you know, how these waves operate and whether or not they can be manipulated. Certainly that could be a dangerous thing for the public to have. So, you know, the fact that they're just letting it out now, as far as a news story goes, you know, yeah, do they already have the bottom line on it, and are they already manipulating this? Because there's already things on the internet about this. I forget his name, but there was already a guy who was making stuff float around with this old military technology by simply, yeah, using these certain frequencies and waves to make things float. And he, you know, had it on. And, of course, the military came right in and confiscated all the stuff and squashed him. But since he was a civilian at the time, they kind of put the kibosh on that. But, interesting.
And I don't know, really. I kind of, what do you think, Max?
Yeah, I personally wouldn't even know. You know, that's not really my expertise, and it is cool you bringing it up. I think, like Rodney was saying, it would tie into a lot of other things. I don't think that would be something that the public would be given access to.
Right.
I mean, if you think about the idea of gravity and being able to control it, manipulate it, and not just gravity in the sense that we know it, but, you know, gravitational waves and everything that you guys are talking about in forms of communication. I think maybe with different technology, it would be allowed to the public, but as far as just actually being able to manipulate gravity to a sense, I don't think that would be made accessible to the public at all. I mean, especially in a lot of the world. I mean, most of the world, you can't even own a gun. You think they're going to let you have some type of gravitational manipulation device? I personally don't think so, but I also want the answer, like Alex brought up, as to why it is the public knows about it now. You think if you finally, you know, discovered how you did this and had this breaking technology, why would you let the public know? It's kind of like winning the lottery. I mean, most people think if you have something that people don't know about, it's kind of a good thing, but that's just my general take on at least the general topic that you guys are speaking of. I think it could tie into a lot of other things.
I kind of look at it in a good way. You know, like, there could be a lot of good to come from gravitational waves. I mean, what if we could fly planes on a gravitational wavelength that we always have going through the stratosphere or whatever level of the atmosphere that it could go through, and then we cut down our carbon footprint and we're starting to move vehicles and stuff with gravitational waves. I mean, when you see UFOs and all that type of stuff, they obviously don't make any sound. They don't have any fire coming out of them. They're working off some type of gravity-manipulating device, which is most likely the gravitational wave being manipulated, or knowing how to control that in time and space in that specific area to transport or even teleport. Teleportation could be possible with this. So I think it's a really cool thing. I mean, yeah, you can always be fearful about new technology. Technology is scary, but I just really feel like there's something good coming from this. I mean, Einstein gave us, you know, E equals MC squared and, nuclear power and stuff like that. And a lot of bad came from it, but also a lot of good. A lot of the ways we're talking and stuff are fueled from it now. So if we could get off of nuclear energy and onto gravitational energy for our main source of movement and energy, it'd be amazing.
Yeah, I agree. What about this? If you could actually do that and you had a substantial power supply or an unlimited power supply, would that suggest then that you can go ahead and start creating stargates and portholes and vortexes yourself, possibly entering into another dimension?
That's what Einstein's theory suggested. It's as if, you know, the waves can be bent and through space and time, like the string theory, like everything's connected. But what connects them is what they could never really figure out. And his theory was that gravitational waves were the things that connected it, but nobody could really prove that these things are real until now. I mean, they give you, like, you can look it up and they'll give you a draw out of the vibration frequency of it and everything, and it's really cool. So, yeah, I believe that Stargate and teleportation and all that type of stuff is, you know, in our future. And I've always believed that science movies or science fiction movies eventually come true anyways. And we've had good experience with that, especially with H.G. Wells' stuff. And so, you know, yeah, I think it's kind of a cool thing going on right now.
How about possible connections with the Higgs boson, a Large Hadron Collider? They've been ramping up their experiments in the last year and doubling the power output of this thing, which has some people concerned. But is this something that they may be touching on? Is this something that they would be interested in or maybe finding out themselves? Where did this information come from?
Which one, the gravitational wave information?
Yeah. Who's putting
that out? All over everywhere, like all over every scientific board. It's like the biggest scientific news of the century. Like, it's a huge, huge deal. It only came out like a day or two ago. So, I mean, everybody's talking about it. Everybody wants to get their hands on it and learn how it works and start getting into it. So we'll probably see some cool development in the near future, or at least this year, of things that they can do. But the potential of it is dramatic for our society as humanity evolves and moves through time. So, you know, this could be an amazing point for humanity. You may come across something that we never knew existed. You know, just kind of like when we created the microscope and we started seeing how the things that were really tiny worked, you know, it might be seeing how things that are really large work.
Yeah, let's postulate a little bit about maybe the future of this. Okay, so right now, humanity has already been so convenient with even just oil and nuclear power that we've basically doubled and tripled and exponentially grown our population. Is giving the population that's already out of control more ease to live a good thing or a bad thing? Or is it possible? Like I said, I mean, obviously it wouldn't give it to everybody. If everybody had, you know, free energy and free movement and all this, then what would happen? You know, I think we're already convenienced enough. I'm just throwing that out there just to try to maybe get some people interested in the subject. But I, you know, it's one of those things that oil has allowed us to, you know, get to the point we are now, and there wouldn't be 7 billion people on the planet if we didn't have those kind of things. But now we're talking about even better, scenarios with these kind of technologies. I really think that at some point we're going to have to get off the juice, and whether or not that's for the masses or not, that's the question, really, is because, you know, everyone seems to be so very secretive of their, you know, obviously if you're a scientist and you discovered this and figure out how to manipulate it, you would probably want to keep it to yourself, or at least for industry. You wouldn't necessarily go and just start blabbing about it to everybody. Very interesting subject, though, for sure. And I'm wondering, like I said, in the future, if you could do that. And like we talked about the UFOs and this ultra-refined aluminum that they use, very lightweight memory metal. But apparently they've got a power a supply that would allow them to create an anti-gravity field, which basically just pulls the craft through space and doesn't actually, it doesn't propel it. It actually just creates a void in front of the craft where it just moves through. And so they can turn on a dime without being squashed because inside is a completely different gravity envelope. But if we could actually manipulate the gravity wave, then you could create, you know, gravity wave cannons that could, you know, break hulls and destroy buildings and things like that to be a terrible weapon.
Yeah, but I don't think weaponizing gravity is really going to be something that has is something that they're going to be willing to mess around with, generally because if you start weaponizing it, the people working around it are going to be affected by it more than they've ever been affected by anything. Like, radiation can be controlled with radio suits, sound waves, vibrations can be controlled with earplugs and different types of suits. Gravity goes right through everything. Gravity affects everything, so it'd be kind of hard to work on it unless, of course, they could use robots, but even robots would be affected by gravity, so I think it's going to be a difficult task for us even to start working with gravity, with the laws of physics.
isn't that you brought up there? Wouldn't, in order to experiment with these waves, wouldn't you have to have a completely gravity-less area to work in? You'd have to do it out in space because you would have, you know, all these other magnetic and gravity waves going on here on the planet. You would have to get away from the background noise and the white noise of these other waves in order to do your experiments. Unless you could do that on Earth somehow, could you create a place on Earth somehow, possibly, that would allow you to be gravity-free so you could do your experiments? They do it with skydiving, and they can take an airplane way up in the atmosphere, and then it just drops so fast that you become weightless. But that's not really how you do it. Would they have to do it out in space?
Well, here's how they found the gravity waves, okay? They found the gravity waves by two black holes, 30 times larger than our sun, circling in on each other and eventually coming to form together. And when they did this, they put off a surge. Apparently, this happened 1.3 billion years ago, but we're just now feeling it where we're at. So it took a ridiculous, I'm talking an extremely large amount of energy for them to just pick up this gravitational wave. So even though we know the wave and everything, can we replicate that amount of energy? Because, you know, if we know anything from Einstein's theory, it's, you know, mass equals energy. And so in gravitational waves, I feel like that still affects the outcome of what happens. There has to be some type of mass behind the gravitational function. Unless we figure out how to alter it in liquid metal and maybe ramp it up like we did with, you know, electrical engines and stuff like that. But, yeah, it's one of those things, like, really, I don't know where it's going to go. I just know that it's out there, and I thought it was really interesting news. And
yeah, that could be a definite good what-if question, because what if we could do that? Like I said, I think it's happened in the past. Not for everybody, but I'm pretty sure it's happened in the past before. There's nothing new under the sun here. So I'm thinking that this could be something that, it could be a great thing for humanity. Could you create enough power to actually simulate two black holes colliding? What kind of power, you know, supply or force would you have to have? The original theory is, being able to use gravity to your advantage. There's all kinds of levers and fulcrums and things like that that, you know, ancient man has used for a long time that has really helped humanity out. And for some reason, it always seems like it's military right off the bat, though, with catapults and trebuchets and all these other things that kill people. But, practical applications of what it could do for us, I think, would be the real question as far as maybe people bringing up some ideas about what it could be put forth to. I don't think that there's an end to it, really. I mean, the concept of gravity waves and manipulation of those waves could go any different direction and could be, hugely destructive or hugely helpful, I think, in either case. But great, great subject. Glad you brought it up.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to hear more developments, like you said, since it's new, what they kind of get from it now. I know, Alex, you follow the science community a lot more than I do, so if you hear anything, it seems like when something comes out, they're going to update it pretty quickly once it's initially new, so hopefully we at least hear a little more than that. They at least know how to do it, see which way it's going. But you had brought up a lot of stuff, and it got me thinking, excuse me, I'm losing my voice a little bit, about, you were bringing up earlier the Hollow Earth theory, and we were talking about Area 51 and, you know, all these different technologies. For whatever reason, I want to touch base on the Hollow Earth theory. It kind of reminded me of the, you know, Nazi Germany experiments they had in Antarctica when they were at the poles, talking about the, you know, entrances to the different parts of the subterranean of the Earth, and they had all their experiments going on there. And there's actually Operation, what was it, High Jump or High Tower? I can't remember which one. It was right after World War II, where there's a bunch of American soldiers that went there, and it was they had, I can't remember how many people were killed, and I think that was right before the end of World War II that they were all had all that going on. The whole Hollow Earth theory, do you, both you, Alex, and Rodney, do you guys think the Earth is, obviously I'm not saying, do you think the Earth's flat, do you think the Earth's hollow? You know, not necessarily completely hollow like they were talking about the theories. I know it's been disproved by science, and they, I think they said the largest hole ever dug was drilled for an oil well by Exxon. It was like 46,000 feet, something like that. So then they know that the Earth, you know, is structurable all the way through down to 46,000 feet, which seems pretty far. So do you think that there's entrances or possibly, I mean, we're not talking about caves, people, you know, all the way back to Greek mythology with the underworld theories, and even Native Americans, there's one out by Missouri that say there's some cave entrances that go, you know, thousands and thousands of feet down into the Earth, or there's theories all over the board. Do you guys think that there's these entrances to, if you want to call it the underworld, or accessible tunnels that go deep, deep down into the Earth, and or is part of the Earth hollow, or, you know, what do you guys think about the different takes on
it? Yeah, I'll just jump in there first. I really, you know, because it's one of those subjects that, you know, people have been considering for a long time. Even the old movies from the 40s and 50s, Journey to the Center of the Earth, where if you can find a cavern or something like that where you could possibly enter into that ends up eventually going down. Now, they've recently found giant crystal caverns down in Mexico and all these other places. So without really using satellite technology and things like that, I'm not for sure how you would go about finding those. But when you were talking about the whole Hitler thing and the, you know, the Nazi Reich going down to the South Pole and stuff like that, there have been several cases where people say that, yeah, we got pretty close and you saw this big hole there or something like that. But, you know, there's no fly zones over those areas. And what's kind of interesting about that is that for our own safety, is it just because, you know, the gravity waves that are coming off of the Earth would distort and screw up your avionics so that you crash? Is that why there's a no fly zone over those areas? Or is it strictly, say, like a, you know, government, you know, boundary zone where you can't fly or something like that? The Aurora Borealis, you know, what did people think about it a long time ago when they saw it? They didn't. We can explain it now so we understand what it is, but the, you know, that's where our basic magnetosphere comes from. You know, the Van Allen belt created simply by the rotation of the Earth and the core. It creates a magnetic field around the Earth, which protects us from the solar radiation and all that. So why would there be no fly zones over that area? Is it simply because of the magnetic field disturbing avionics, or is it something different? The Hollow Earth theory, like I said, I'm really fascinated by the journey to the center of the Earth. People have thought that, you know, maybe if you were an ET, then that's probably where you would be. It ties into the whole Bigfoot theory. It ties into the ET theory. So it's not like extraterrestrial, but terrestrial, extraterrestrial kind of, you know, like thing, you know, where there's actually people here living on the Earth that are supposed to watch over humanity, and then they kind of control stuff from underground. That would be the stories that I've heard about, and it's kind of interesting to think about. Do I have any scientific proof to say that it is real or not real? Not really, but it's a fascinating subject, and certainly one of those things that, you know, could be speculated on forever. But why would, you know, governments and, you know, the military and things like that, and Germany at that time be interested in that? Because he was very much interested in the esoteric and all these very strange things, and could it be that there's some sort of, you know, agreement with governments and maybe people who, you know, are trying to get in there, and they have some sort of pact with these people that might live down there? But I really think that there's definitely huge caverns under the Earth, that's for sure. And it's certainly not all explored either. But whether or not that actually there's a separate sun inside the Earth, and that the Earth is actually hollow with several, you know, 100 miles of a cavity where there's creatures that live there and have an internal sun, that's a little far-fetched. But there have been many explorers and scientists who draw maps and create these ideas and throw it out there and for us to speculate on, but it would be very fantastical. And if you would think of how important the Earth is, even in our, you know, solar system or our own galaxy, because of this, you know, the biological diversity that's on the Earth, could it be that our watchers or our creators or our you know, whoever might be, you know, using that as a means? You know, do we want to get into the whole, you know, people always think that hell is down there and heaven is up there. It's sort of strange how we kind of equate it with that, but apparently we... Scientifically, we know that the Earth has a molten lead core because obviously whatever the heaviest material is going to sink to the center. And then, of course, that rotates, creating a magnetic field, and they can explain that and anything else. But what's in between that core and the outer shell? We know that the outer shell are just tectonic plates that are very thin. They might be, you know, yeah, 7 or 8 miles thick, but that's actually pretty thin compared to the entirety of the Earth. So these plates are simply floating and jostling around on, you know, giant pools of lava and magma. But that doesn't necessarily mean that lava and magma is actually, you know, goes all the way from that to the center of the Earth. So scientifically speaking, yeah, it's not really a provable thing, but, you know, very good, interesting thing to speculate on. I'll let Alex, you know, take the rest of it.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say that, actually, Edmund Halley in 1692 was the first one to bring up the Hollow Earth theory.
Yeah.
And so it's been around for a long time, and I'm sure back then he was criticized, and, you know, people still just probably were very harsh in their criticism of it. And even now, they still are. Like, if you believe in the Hollow Earth theory or if you're talking about it, usually people go, okay, this guy's a loony or something, you know, but... It's one of those things that why did they mention it in 1692 and then it's still being talked about nowadays? And for the average person, you're not going to go fly to the North or South Pole and go there. And it's hard to get there, you know. I mean, I don't even know if they can fly over it, honestly. I don't know how all that works, but...
No fly
zone for some reason because of the magnetic poles, which would interfere with all the equipment on board of the plane, supposedly, and, you know, caused the plane to crash and everything. So you have to walk there or get there by a dog or whatever. And there's been people that have tried, but most of the people have died that have tried. It's just such a harsh terrain and everything. So, you know, that's why I think the idea is still a plausible idea for a lot of people is just because we don't know. And it's I'm from the show-me state, so I need to see it with my eyes before I believe it. And there's quite a few appealing pictures out there on the internet of the Hollow Earth and everything, but you know, the things underground are really going on. People may not want to believe in them, but they are real. There's, you know, you can go look up DUMS, D period U period M period whatever.
Yep.
B dumb. Yep. I don't know. I'm dyslexic sometimes. Sorry, but
either
way, they have these, right? And so we know that the Germans created that giant worm that they used to build tunnels underground. I mean, that's how they made the particle collider and everything. But there's theories, and it's speculated that there's also thermonuclear capabilities for tunneling. So basically, it just uses thermonuclear abilities to vitrify the rock and make this, like, glass-like circle underground so that they can tunnel,
exactly,
like, all the way to China in a day or something. So...
Not in a day, right. But
well, you know,
is,
but really fast.
Instead of having to shore up your tunneling, it shores itself up by, turning the rock into glass. And so if you've got a tunneling machine that uses nuclear power, then you can just melt the rock and it creates a stable platform where you don't have to shore up the rest of the inside of the tunnel anymore. It's already shored up and waterproof. So,
it's like a vacuum, you know.
Yeah, what a great technology. But, you know, when you do get into the center of the Earth, it's
Hello?
And, Rodney?
Hello? I'm still here.
Rodney, you still there?
Yeah, we're all here. What's up? But yeah, boring technology, the nuclear boring technology that you're talking about, is certainly superior to a regular tunneling machine that would use, you know, cutters and wheels, and you'd have to take the rock away or whatever. But, you know, we know that, you know, that this technology, I think, has been around for a bit, and whether or not, you know, it's a proven thing, and obviously they're going to keep it under wraps, but certainly interesting technology as far as that goes. And the domes are something that we know exists, but, you know, highly secretive, kind of like Area 51, where, you know, it's only for people who, I mean, it's this theory of the breakaway society, where there's a whole, you know, sector of people who only work and to, you know, to try to get a sustainable situation going where they can possibly continue on if some disaster happens on the Earth, say a giant solar flare or a meteor or something like that. They've got technology now where they can live underground for several years.
Well, I think it's totally plausible. I mean, you know, when I grow vegetables, I start them indoors, which is just amazing to me that even works. But they grow really well if you give them the right circumstances and everything. So even better than they do outside in the right conditions. So for people to thrive underground, is totally a plausible thing.
Yeah, if you could recreate the you know, the aspects of a full spectrum light, because you need to, you know, your body needs to create vitamin D from the sunlight and all that. I mean, you'd think you'd eventually turn into a weird gray alien or something like that if you had to live on the ground in a really dark, unlit area. But certainly, definitely plausible. I think that's been happening for the last few decades, if not longer. So is there something to this breakaway society theory where there's a whole, you know, sector that's going to prepare themselves for something that, you know, the rest of the world is not, you know, even considering?
A lot of these world leaders and these people that have power and stuff are constantly in fear because they're constantly under pressure and stress. They know how things work, and they know that there's always somebody that wants to take your place. So I think a lot of these things were provoked out of fear and natural causes, like you said, and that's probably why the grays could develop to be what they are, because when you go underground, you can have artificial lighting and all these things, but, you know, you're not getting the exposure to the universe, like these, you know, cosmic rays and stuff that are harmful for you. So you actually become a little bit more tender and you can't come back anymore. So, you know, maybe that's even where we came at. Maybe they were like wanting to come back to the surface, so they did some modification and here we are, and now we're out of control and they don't know what to do with us. And maybe that's like a constant war that's going on. It's a possibility. It's a little out there, but.
Yeah, interesting. Well, we'll get to some of that other maybe at some other time. Let's get into some more paranormal stuff about this prehistoric creatures that may still be living. You know, this idea that, yeah, the oceans and certain things and even the Oliver theory can kind of get into this where we're finding things that, you know, science told us in school that, oh, that these things don't exist and all these kind of things. But we had mentioned on the show before about, you know, these basically genetic manipulations of creatures that obviously science has been working on now for a long time. And if you could find the DNA of an ancient dinosaur, you know, it's the Jurassic Park theme. Are we going to just, you know, start creating T-Rexes and have them running around, or is that something that we can do? But as far as prehistoric creatures that still may be living, like the Loch Ness Monster and things like that, I think it's a really good possibility that certain creatures had, you know, found a little niche or something that they could live in during those really hard times with when our planet was being bombarded with whatever it was. Either it was giant, you know, volcanoes and asteroid impacts and whatever else it might have been that killed them off. Some of them may have survived. And is it just only sea creatures? Or is it, like, maybe possibly other things as well? You know, there's some kinds of critters have on land right now that, you know, have ancient, you know, sort of prehistoric, you know, like the walleye fish and things like that. You know, there's, you know, these, you know, they have lineage to prehistoric times. So it's interesting. I'm wondering if what do we think about this Loch Ness monster idea? Is it possible?
Yeah. Well, I want to get to that just in 1 second. We have actually a caller on the line that's been here for about 20, 30 seconds. So I want to get to them real quick and, maybe they want to talk about that. If not, then I actually, you know, I have a lot of information that I, you know, wanted to go over at that too. So we'll get right back into that, see if they had anything they want to talk about. I'll get to them in 1 second. Let's see. And hi, how's it going?
Hey. Can you hear me?
Hello.
How's it going?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, guys. Jim from Florida.
Oh, hey, how's it going?
Hey, pretty good. Yourself?
Yeah, we're doing great.
Good. Yeah, I was just tuning in, and actually, one of the things you were talking about, I wanted to ask a couple of questions. If you had ever heard about, when you're talking about prehistoric creatures and stuff like that, if you had ever heard of the bloop, and I guess it's like a ultra-low-frequency sound that was detected underwater that people speculated could have been some type of prehistoric thing. And then the other thing I was thinking about, my original call was going to be about the wow signal. If you had heard anything about that, knew more about that.
So did you say bloop and wow?
Yeah. So the bloop, I guess, was just an underwater frequency that they thought could have been some kind of unknown.
Are we talking about the mermaid theory? Because what they discovered a while back, too, if you watch that little Discovery or History Channel thing where they did a special on the mermaids, if you look at ancient times, there's carvings and things out there with the... it's really interesting that we got webbing between our fingers and monkeys don't, so I'll just throw that out there. But what they're finding is that it could be creatures in the ocean that actually, like dolphins and whales that use sonar for their communication. And what they're finding out is they're discovering new sonar hits that they can't explain and that they don't know what they are. And this came about, certainly by with them, people were wondering why all these creatures were washing up dead on the beaches, because apparently the military was out there with their high sonar weapons and just, pinging the whole area, and just anybody, any dolphin or any whale that uses that, for the communications, it just kills them, basically fries their brain. So that was one of the scenarios that they were talking about this whole mermaid theory, and that they communicated via this sort of carrier, this wave, this bloop, what you might call it. But I'm not for sure if this is the same thing we're talking about. The bloop itself, like I say, it could be an unknown creature, an unknown whale that we haven't discovered. I mean, whales themselves, though, they breathe air, so they would have to come off. And that's just something that, is totally different than that. Most whales and dolphins and things like that, they are mammals. They do breathe air, so they have to come up to the surface. So, most animals that use sonar and things like that are pretty well like that. So is this something else entirely? Is this a bloop of equated with, maybe ETs or underwater extraterrestrials or USOs possibly, or an animal? I'd like to get your take on that. I mean, would you equate it then with a species of whale or something like that?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. It is along the same wavelength of what like a blue whale would make.
Okay, right.
So,
Yeah,
it's one of those mysterious sounds that I don't think they had a whole lot of idea of what it was, other than asking you more about it.
Okay, yeah, I don't know much other than it could be, something like that.
The Japanese have been testing a lot of stuff sonar related. I mean, they made a supersonic sonar missile that can travel like to us and really quickly. So, I mean, I think they're testing around with some stuff underwater, and that could be where you get that. And then the wow signal, I don't really know how to feel about that. I mean, the scientific community was in an uproar over it because, it was an anomaly in the radio wave activity that gave it some type of presence that was unusual to the cosmos. So, is it alien? I don't know, but I honestly don't think it is, because I feel like they're talking on different wavelengths, like maybe what I mentioned earlier, the gravitational wavelengths, and that it could have just been a radio disturbance within the equipment, I don't know.
One thing is, I guess I never really understood the significance of it when I first saw that. What's the big deal? It was just so different from the normal signals that they'd be intercepting that it could have been something...
I don't think there's anything that stood out necessarily was so different, and I may be wrong, but also the way that they had tested it, the reason it was called the wow signal was they were able to have it, printed out and through code that basically was saying wow. It wasn't just some anomaly as far as noises go. But in my opinion, they could probably do the same test on a million different frequencies and put the, whatever it's saying together and probably have it be similar or close to other words. So,
yeah,
I think that's what a lot of people's argument was, but I think you know, like Alex said, was real big in the scientific community for a while, especially back in the 70s, you know, and right after the space race and everything was going on, I feel like science was at an all-time, not high, but, you know, publicized a lot more than it is today. We don't really ever hear much about, you know, NASA or really anything so much more than we did back in the day, so.
It's interesting that you brought this up, too, because I want to throw something out there that's sort of like, you know, if the military is testing something or another country's military is testing something and you have a secular team of scientists or a public team of scientists that finds the signal that they can't explain, they're not going to come out and say, oh, yeah, that was us. So it may be humanity doing this and then just not fessing up to it because it could be secular society that has found the signal and says, what is this? This is really weird. But the people who created it are like, no, we're not going to say anything about it. We'll just let you speculate on it, and we're not going to, you know, tell you what it is. But that could be.
That makes sense, especially with the bloop thing as well, with it, you know, testing of sonar and stuff like that. You know,
yeah.
Maybe it's in one way or another technology being tested and people not talking about it.
Right. Because you live out there too with those, you know, big shipping lanes and things like that. We're you know, the military, that's part of their job is to protect the shipping lanes and things like that. And, you know, their sonar is the best way to figure out what's in the ocean and what's around you, and maybe use it for fishing and everything else. But, you know, when it comes to strange signals like that, is it repeatable, or is it something that we can find again, or did it only happen one time?
Interesting. I'd like to say real quick that the WOW is basically we received a radio signal from space. We are constantly sending them out to space, right, to be picked up or maybe somebody will hear it. That's why on the satellite that keeps on going, the Hubble, I forget the actual name of it, you know, has that CD playing in it to the universe. So we're constantly sending out signals to the universe, but we happen to get one back. So that's what that loop is.
It'd be like sitting there with a radio on. And you're just
basically
getting white noise or fuzz, and then all of a sudden you get something that sounds like a word.
Yeah, it's basically like a giant radio that we're just constantly listening to, and we finally picked up something on it, and that's when they freaked out. And it's in tune to the cosmos. It's not like anything land-based. It's like past the atmosphere is where it's projecting these frequencies from. So that's why the scientific community freaked out about it. But it hasn't been, you know, replicated since. And it's actually broke down in the code. And that's where the code is shown, highlighted when you see pictures of it, stuff like that.
Yeah, kind of like the gravity wave thing. Could it be that we're basically just receiving a wave from a supernova or colliding of black holes or something like that, or you know, a possible, you know, signal that comes from, say, a large explosion or something like that? Or is it possibly a communication avenue that somebody's trying to reach us with? Obviously, it happened a while back, and unless we hear it again, so you have to be able to drown out all the background noise as well. And if they've done that successfully and did receive a wave and could quantify it, then they might be able to find out, yeah, obviously the direction that it came from, that should be plausible.
Well, that's the cool thing about the gravity waves, and that's why it's such a cool thing in scientific communities, because maybe that's what other technology or other species of life out there are already using. You know, we're using radio waves and all this stuff, and if we can figure out how to manipulate them and listen to gravity waves fine-tuned like we did with radio waves, then we might pick up all kinds of stuff.
What about the, like, even the movie, was it the fourth Star Trek movie where they had to go back to Earth? Back in time, because there was a satellite, you know, that was destroying the Earth because they were trying to communicate with whales, and there wasn't any left, and so they had to go back in time to get one to bring it back so it could communicate with this orbiting satellite that was causing all these, you know, horrible problems, you know. So is it, you know, something like that, or there's actually, you know, other intelligence on this Earth other than us? So it doesn't necessarily mean it's the signals for us. Could be that we just intercepted a signal meant for the people on the hollow Earth, or maybe animals, or who knows. But I kind of equate it with some sort of a space explosion or something like that that's just now reaching us. It could have happened, you know, a million years ago, but just now reaching us. But yeah, until they come out until they, you know, hear it again or something, that maybe kind of explains why I think that they haven't heard it again. It's just a one-time, you know, thing that we got from some sort of colliding galaxies or a supernova or something like that. That would be my take. Definitely interesting question. Glad you brought it up.
Yeah, great. Appreciate it, and I'll stay tuned in and talk to you guys soon.
Yeah. If you ever hear any news in Florida about anything going on with the Bermuda Triangle or any orbs or ghostly encounters or UFOs or anything like that, always shoot us a text or an email or something or give us a call.
Absolutely. All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Have a good one, man.
All right.
Yeah, interesting subject. The bloop and the wow, one of those things that since we don't know what it is, we'd like to speculate.
Yeah, absolutely. Before I forget, I know we were talking about prehistoric creatures before all that, so we'll go ahead and jump back to that. You know, you had mentioned having a niche or having a specific environment certain creatures were in that may have helped them, or whatever they used to be, in the sense that they may have evolved since then. Survive the whole whatever it was. People say meteor shower, earthquake, aliens. There's a million different things that people say are why the dinosaurs are gone. But there's certainly creatures out there. I think that dinosaur is a kind of an antiquated term, in my opinion, in the aspect that we see something that we're not familiar with that kind of looks a little reptilian, and we call it a dinosaur. So there's definitely creatures out there that I think are prehistoric in nature that have probably been around forever. I mean, they've proven that, like, the giant stingrays, if you if you were to go over to, like, Thailand, Brazil, of course Australia, I believe, has them too. And rest in peace, Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter. I know he got taken out by one, but the actual giant stingrays, not just ones that people are used to seeing, they have ones that are 16, 17, 20 feet long. And they got a 2 foot long stingray going out of the back of it, and you picture that going down the river, and you see it. And we have alligator gars. There's a million different things that I think you'd find, particularly in the ocean, that are incredibly ridiculous that we're just not familiar with. And even now, you can look at the oil wells that they have, the oil tankers that they have out in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
Where they have those things set up, they have those underwater cameras that have caught the elbowed squids before, which they're yet to even catch one of those or study them. They've only seen pictures of them. They're not even familiar with them. But, they supposedly have tentacles that, go hundreds of feet down to the ground. And there's a million types of creatures, I think, that probably exist on the earth that we're not familiar with. And the prehistoric nature, I think, comes specifically from the idea that we just don't know about them. But, that's just my general take on it. The stingray one I thought was the one that was and the goblin sharks are – they've actually just caught one out in Florida. I can't remember the town, but I saw some pictures of it. I don't know if you guys have ever seen a goblin shark, but they are one of the ugliest-looking sharks I've ever seen. It's you can just go to Google or whatever, type in goblin shark. But, they literally look like some type of really ugly shark with a unicorn horn coming out of it. It's really – a ridiculous-looking creature, and I think that there's always going to be creatures and fossils and things that they're discovering that kind of point to what was out there. But I think as time goes on, and especially the way that the world's been ran, even back in the 20s, 30s, there were still some creatures out there that are amazing and now are gone, and that we have pictures of when you were around, and they're gone now. So I think slowly over time, especially the land mammals around the United States and everything, are going to be going away more so and more so. But I think, like we were talking about all the time, I think the ocean's the number one unexplored spot, and I think that's where we'd find a lot of these creatures. That would be the environment for them to survive in and thrive in. I mean, if you're 17, 20 feet long, you got a million things to eat.
Yeah, and if you're deep under the ocean and there was a comet impact or something like that, well, you'd pretty well be protected, I think. If you that's where you'd want to be, is several thousand feet under the ocean. And we've only been down there a few times as far as but they find new stuff every time they go down there. And the peacocks and the oarfish and the walleye and all these other creatures that we still have around are a lot smaller, but they have ties to that still prehistoric blood in them or something like that. But certainly, that's where it would be. I think the oceans would be the place to look for any prehistoric creatures that might still be alive. And I said that might change because of the changing of the ocean, the temperature. And if that changes, then the food supply changes and their routes change, and then they might come closer to the surface where they might be spotted. So definitely interesting. I really think that, science has got to that point now where we can, if we could get a hold of DNA, fossilized DNA that was still somehow protected in the mud of, on the floor of the ocean, and if it was still viable, we could recreate that creature. And I think that is possible, and I think they probably have already done that to some extent. We don't have access to it, but I really think that's a plausible theory.
Can I ask you guys something? Have you ever heard of tardigans?
I feel like I have, but I can't remember what it is.
Well, they're microscopic. They're very, very tiny. We didn't even know they existed until we actually started using microscopes. But basically, these little creatures, I mean, this, I'm quoting this, but aliens could be forgiven for mistaking this the home of the tardigans because there's so many of them. And these little guys can survive in the vacuum of space. They can live on a comet and travel across the universe. Like, that's how hardy and tough these guys are. And so, like, those guys have to be, like, prehistoric or been around for way longer than we have, and they just keep surviving. You know, what they'll evolve into, I don't know. But to know that there's something out there that can survive the vacuum of space is very interesting because that means there could be all kinds of other creatures that we don't know about. I mean, they're just small scale. Like, whenever you talk about prehistoric creatures, you want to envision something large, something that you can actually put a picture to. But there's a lot of stuff going on small scale that's pretty interesting, too. And that's
exactly
what a tardigan is.
Right. Yeah, science is finding all kinds of new bacterias and amoebas and things that can actually live in caustic environments. They actually synthesize, different materials to form energy. And this is something that science is now finding out, that there's different ways to create energy. These certain types of little tiny microscopic creatures are somehow taking these materials and creating energy and life out of them. And we thought that was impossible, and we're finding out that that's not the case anymore. So the idea that there could be life on other planets and things is starting to really open up as far as...
Well, I'm kind of getting more at, like, the hardiness of creatures. Like, there's a lot of animals that did survive the prehistoric age. I mean, alligators and a lot of things that we see nowadays. Birds have always been around for a long time and stuff, but very unique creatures, ones that can't be seen very often. Yes, I believe they exist. Not so much on land, but, I mean, the Alaskan wilderness is vastly unexplored because it's so harsh. So, yeah, there could be a Sasquatch up there. There could be something weird up there. But the ocean is even more unexplored. I mean, we drop billions of dollars into space exploration, but only just a few, like, minuscule amounts compared to that into ocean exploration. So I think there's quite a few very interesting prehistoric creatures living under the ocean, which makes me a little nervous to go swimming in the ocean. I don't really like it, honestly. I don't like knowing that there could be something big kraken down there that's going to jump out and eat me. And actually, the kraken is a really cool thing. I love seeing that guy in movies and stuff. Like, it's huge and supposed to devour cities. And, like, you know, what if there is a kraken just down there sleeping under the ocean, just snoring away? And we're going to wake that guy up by shooting sonars and doing the things that we're doing, like you were saying earlier with the bloop, you know? You may wake something up down there that you don't want to wake up. I strongly believe that there's something down there.
Yeah, and how big and how ferocious is it, and whether or not it's we have stories of way back in the day of giant squid coming up and taking down ships. We've got old seafarer tales about, you know, strange creatures and things like that, giant sharks and whatnot. And why not? I mean, if there was, if the conditions are right and the oxygen levels are right, certainly it's kind of like the Land of the Lost theory where everything's just bigger, everything's, you know, super size, colossal size. And there were several movies out that kind of alluded to that, you know, the giant squid and stuff like that. And they're finding, you know, examples of that. But the colossal squid and things like that, you know, these squids take down, you know, whales and things like that, and drag them down to the bottom of the ocean so they can't breathe anymore, and then they do whatever they will. But certainly, yeah, that is one unexplored area. And if you were trying to hide, that's where you would be. Or if you were a prehistoric creature and you wanted to survive, and maybe that was just their natural habitat, so they would be left over. But if they never go above, say, 3,000 feet or something like that, then no one would ever see them. And so, but once temperatures of the ocean change, I think we might be seeing some more stuff coming in the future.
I agree. Hey, Max, do you believe in the Kraken?
Yeah, well, no, I was going to jump in. I do believe in the Kraken. Of course I believe in the Kraken. I do like to think, I believe everything in the world, like I said, is possible in the ocean because, you know, I live near it, and even when you go out and take a little boat out and you barely go out anywhere, you know, you see little dolphins jumping around and they start showing off for you. And I know that's totally aside from the fact, but I think that there's so much unexplored things that go on in the ocean that the idea that there's some type of massive, I think that the movies that it's in may be a little exaggerated. I don't necessarily think that there's this, however big they are in the movies, you know, a mile long thing down there that's going to, you know, take down oil tankers. That may be possible, but, I mean, you look at like a megalodon tooth that they have from back in the day compared to a great white's tooth, and it's, yeah, you know, it's insane. I mean, it's probably 200-300 times bigger, so I think that anything's possible in the sense of the ocean, but what I'm more terrified of than the ocean is the idea of, you guys were mentioning, you know, back in the day, and aside the fact from survival, you know, what killed them off, the idea of, you know, these prehistoric creatures, if they were to come back or still be around, the ones that flew, you know, I'm more scared, yeah, of that. You know, if I could stay away from the ocean, the whole idea of, you know, the Aztec sun god and the Quetzalcoatl and the flying, yeah, serpents and everything, they have skeletons of some of these creatures that, you know, the size of giraffes that flying around with massive beaks, and, you know, they're 40 feet tall and across. They got a 40-foot wingspan. It's that kind of scares me a little more than the ocean, in the sense that if I were living back in those times, or that were to be the case, I could stay away from the ocean. I could stop fishing and, you know, move far away from water. But when you're talking about things flying out of the sky, I mean, that's a little more,
yeah,
intense, in my opinion.
Right. And this goes back to, they're even now finding, this happened to me a long time ago when I was a kid. I remember back in Oregon watching, and I was out playing with my friends, and I just looked up at one of these big pine trees, and it looked like the top of the tree was weird, and I was looking at it for a second. All of a sudden, the entire top of the tree took off and flew off. I mean, this is like a giant California condor or something. This thing must have had a 20, 30-foot wingspan. I was freaked out as a kid. I was like, what? You know, I couldn't explain it. You know, I was like, I've seen eagles and I've seen condors and all this, but this was probably twice, three times the size. And so, I mean, but now, you know,
wow,
scientists finding that there are these large sort of, you know, type of birds that could have survived. And if they, you know, are in certain areas where people don't go, then they could probably, you know, eke out a living and survive. But this goes back to the whole, I know people have been bringing up in all these sci-fi channels and stuff with the weird man-like flying creatures and the Mothman and all these other things, the Jeepers Creepers, you know, that kind of thing, where you've got, I mean, really it's physically kind of impossible to have unless you had hollow bones like a bird, that a human being could, you know, fly around with any great accuracy. We got too much body mass to do that. But these prehistoric creatures in the, you know, California condors and stuff are known to be really big, but, you know, the idea that something could just, you know, fly and pick you up and take off with you, like some sort of old Sinbad movie or something. I think it's possible that they're still around. Obviously, they're going to steer clear of any, you know, development or mankind in general, but giant birds, most birds are all prehistoric, pretty much. And, you know, that's why I kind of a little interested in this whole Mothman theory and all these, because we talked about Bigfoot quite a bit. That's something that can be, you know, kind of quantified as, you know, maybe a prehistoric creature that has, you know, lived out and found a niche and could survive. But when it comes to birds, you know, like I said, they're not going to be underground or in the ocean. So how would they hide from a natural disaster, such as a planet-wide disaster, and whether they could or not, it's kind of interesting to think about. But, yeah, there's certain all kinds of creatures that are prehistoric, and whether or not mankind has the science to bring them back or not, you know, instead of the Jurassic Park theory of bringing these creatures back to life, and whether we want to or not. Was there a reason why they were destroyed to make room for us? That was the theory. Certainly, we probably wouldn't survive very well if there was, you know, giant pterodactyls and T-Rexes running around eating us up. We probably wouldn't survive very long. So
Or we could ride them.
Well, you know, since they have such small brains, I'm sure if you could somehow stun one or capture one and then train it as it was small, you might be able to get away with something like that. We've done that with our domesticated animals today. And so, yeah, you could probably...
Well, I know it's kind of a funny question, but it's true. You could. You know,
yeah,
and that's
kind
of like what the new Jurassic Park's about, with the whole, like, modified for war machines and all that stuff. And there's a lot of good anime out there about riding dinosaurs. But anyways, I am going to have to hop off here, guys. I really appreciate the conversation and the time you've given me to talk on here. It was a really good time. Really good combo, for sure.
Yeah.
I'll catch you guys next time, and, you know, keep up the good work, like always.
Yeah. I'll appreciate it, Alex.
Yeah, thank you, Alex.
All right, I'll see you guys later.
All right,
I really appreciated his point about, you know, some of those things that he brought up with the gravity wave. I'd say, he's kind of a little more scientific and, he likes to talk about science and technology a little more than, you know, paranormal stuff. But it all kind of folds into paranormal because it's not normal. So it's always good.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always good to have a scientific background in the sense of knowing. I mean, I'm really not too affluent when it comes to knowing about science and technology. I hear about the things that are popular, but understanding how things work and the breakdown of it has really never been my strong suit. So, we're running down to just the last few minutes here anyway. So if there's any callers that want to call in, 646-668-2170, if you guys got any last questions. I know we had brought up just about everything from all over the board tonight, but the prehistoric creatures is one I think we could go all over, do probably a 2-hour show on and actually, get some more callers to bring up different theories and everything. The stingray one was the one that freaked me out a little bit because you can look it up, pictures of them online. They're, I've seen stingrays all the time, and, down here, a lot of people do in Florida, when you take your boat out, when you go up to certain places where I live, you just put your boat a little bit out in the water and, you just wade into shore and, there's not necessarily docks everywhere. And, you'll see stingrays come up to you all the time. So, it's scary and you know what they're capable of and everything like that. And you know to stay away from them. But to see one that is, 20, 30, 40 times the size of a normal one, that's just a little bit ridiculous. And that one stuck out to me quite a bit. But there's always that's what I love when they come out with a new creature or an unknown creature or something they've seen for the first time or aren't sure if it's what they've seen for the first time. I could look at pictures of that stuff all day. I think that's one of the more fascinating things is the unknown when it comes to discovering new species.
Well, I always had a really great respect for the Jacques Cousteau's of the world, people that would go to the depths of the ocean and swim next to a giant whale or a shark. I mean, that's just crazy to me. I mean, I like swimming, but I have this fear. I mean, I think you have these divers that go down to the bottom of dams and, where these giant catfish, 20 feet long. I always had this giant fear of, being completely in the ocean and there's thousands of feet of water underneath you and, what's down there. I mean, it just kind of freaks me out a little bit. Never been a big fan of swimming in the ocean. Simply because, you can
no,
step
it's nice
on
when you can see shore.
right. I mean, the idea that even you go out there and even a little invisible jellyfish could really screw you up. You know what I mean? You get touched by one of those mantis or something, and you're pretty well done for. But especially if you're out in the middle of the ocean swimming around. So I've always had a great respect for anybody who, I see these great footages of these people swimming next to giant whales and stuff, and I mean, you're risking your life. Big time, and I really take my hat off to them, to these people that can explore the ocean and don't have a fear of going down, past 100 feet or so. Even free divers, it's just amazing that they've got the balls to go and do that. I suppose if you had the backup and the personnel and everything, you could feel a little more secure about it, but open water was one of those movies. Yeah, you don't want to get stuck out in the ocean. You're a goner if you're stuck out in the ocean.
Oh, no, not that movie.
that
movie's a
nightmare.
I think about that all the time. I've been invited to go on cruises and whatnot before. I can't get myself to do it. I know they're perfectly safe and, millions of people do it. But in my mind, after seeing that movie or whichever one, the one of the two people just floating out there forever, I can't deal with it. Yeah, the idea of not being able to see land and you know, there's nothing out there. And you brought up, you know, the explorers of, you know, back in the day. You think about people that used to get on these wooden ships, too, and, you know, it,
yeah,
not
oh,
these
God.
Massive cruise liners now going all throughout the ocean, not just, you know, the creatures that may be out there, but dealing with rogue waves and, you know, Mother Nature throwing everything in the middle of the ocean and storms at them. I tip my hat off, like you said, to all those people.
Yeah.
I certainly would have been one of those people sitting on the island trying to – I probably dig
right.
on the ground and something to eat. I would not have made it off the island. So,
right.
yeah, people
yeah.
back in the day, I think, had the curious gene a little more. I think probably they needed to survive or needed to, you know, do things a little more than we do today. We live in the age of convenience, unfortunately. In my opinion, it's great and it's not so great because
right.
it's – there's so many things to do. We're not really – the average people aren't going to, you know, gather up most of their friends and throw their money down and quit their jobs and get in a ship and go explore unexplored places and all that. It's more so of, I guess, a hobby now for people that have the money to do it than a way of living.
All right. Well, you brought something earlier. What if that you could pick the memory of all the dead seafarers of history and what they could tell you? I mean, you know, you're back in the 1400s or 1200s or whatever, and you get on some wooden ship with some oars and you go out in the middle of the ocean. I mean, what kind of balls you got to have to do that? And then to try to sail to some land that you don't even know exists and you think you're going to fall off the edge of the world or something? I mean, really, as far as men and what they did back in the day to do what they did, sometimes I guess you could think of it as, you know, exploration, and then if you had the backing of the money, you would want to be important and you know be heralded as a great person, Magellan and Columbus and all these people who, you know, go around the world and find new areas and whatnot. But I really think even George Washington had his little stories of seeing a USO. So kind of weird that, you know, we still have stories like that we're still like blowing off today. And so if you could pick
yep.
the brain of all the ancient dead seafarers that are lying at the bottom of the ocean and all the shipwrecks and what they containers might hold. And I always like those shows about, you know, these people who go dive on ancient shipwrecks and try to find stuff. But there's a great competition for that going on. And I know that's kind of a cutthroat business to be in because you're out in the middle of the ocean. There's no law out there. You know what I mean? You do whatever you want and no one's there to see you. You know, so
yeah, that's,
I can imagine.
Yeah, the guy used to do that.
Right. I can just imagine the cutthroat nature of what pirates and ancient seafarers had to go through, because if you're out there on a ship and somebody had a bigger, faster ship, what do you do? You're done, you know. There was no law of the land. It's the ocean. And you got away with whatever you can get away with, and that's stealing other people's ships or whatever it might be. But I can just imagine that those people actually saw those giant squids and giant whales and the Moby Dick stories and things like that really – sort of we take for granted now. But, you know, like I said, if you lived 200-400 years ago, those creatures might have been around. Maybe they weren't, you know, very plentiful, but they probably still were around. That's the Loch Ness Monster theory, where, you know, if you get a deep enough, big enough lake, and there was a natural disaster that wiped all the life on the planet off or whatever for the most part, and you were down underneath the lake that didn't get really changed all that dramatically, you did survive if you had a mate and you lived for a long time. But this idea of, like, you know, I mean, what's the lifespan of most aquatic creatures? These turtles live to be 100 years old. You know?
Yeah,
and
Charles
so,
Darwin's turtle still hanging around.
I had a
sea turtle from the Galapagos, I can't talk, island, and it's still around today. It's actually still living. Or it might have died recently. I heard news about it, but yeah, you know, lived to be 180, 200 years old, whatever.
Yeah, I find that fascinating that, you know, born on a beach, and it's amazing to me why we don't have these skills that these other creatures do. These birds that navigate the globe by using the magnetic waves of the earth to find direction, and it's the same way that the sea creatures do it too. I mean, these little turtles and salmon and stuff, they're born, they're little tiny fish, they got a tiny little pea brain, but somehow they can swim out in the middle of the ocean in this vast, you know, distance, and then somehow make it back to exactly where they were born. It's just amazing to me that that's, you know, possible. And it just seems weird that we're like the top of the food chain here, but we don't have the skills that even the most basic creatures on the planet have. I just think that's amazing to me. You know, like, why don't we have telepathic abilities and sonar, and why can't we feel when an earthquake's going to happen?
You know, maybe, or did we lose it? Maybe we had it at one point, and, you know, we've lost it because we don't need it anymore. They say, you know, like our dogs relieve themselves and they go outside, they pee in alignment with the magnetic axis of the earth. They have to be lined up a certain way. They're very picky with it. So, like you said, in the whole movies, you know, every disaster movie or anytime anything goes wrong, you know, the idea of bugs and animals in general, they start acting up, they start fleeing. You know, you'll have is it flies? I can never remember. Whatever it is that starts hitting your windshield, everything with the bugs going crazy, at least in the Midwest when a tornado or bad weather storms are coming. And, you know, I think that, like you said, regardless of brain size, at a certain point, I don't know if it's brain or just, you know, natural instincts that we're born with. You know, we're not taught it when we're born, but we know how to cry. We're, you know, we know how to open our mouth and, you know how to move around. You know, there's certain instincts, I think, that are automatically programmed in, but we aren't attuned to that. You know, I certainly can't walk outside and close my eyes really hard and figure out which way magnetically is, you know, the earth spinning and all that. So the fact that dogs and cats and everything like that can figure that out, we can't. Why, is it the simple answer? You know, we don't need it to survive. You know, we're all sitting around on our computers now and everything's fine. And, or is it, do we lose it for another reason? Or we were never supposed to have it, or what?
Right. Did we lose it because we didn't need it? I've got this funny picture in my head when you were talking about the dog scenario, because we've all seen dogs running out there who want to take a poop, and they'll go around in a circle 3 or 4 times and then start, and then they'll go around in a circle a couple more times, and they're always trying to find the perfect direction, you know, like it's just circling to try to find that perfect direction to take a crud, you know. But, you know, there's beetles on the earth that don't even fly conventionally. The science is now finding that these little beetles have this certain pattern on the underneath side of their wing that allows them to levitate, for crying out loud. They don't even fly by flapping the wings. They open up their wings and they levitate via this special underneath wing, and the pattern that is on the wing creates this anti-gravity, a beetle. Okay, we were talking about mankind figuring out, you know, gravity waves. I mean, this little beetle's been doing it for thousands of years. It's just amazing to me that, you know, all the examples of the creatures on the earth all have something to teach us if we could just, you know, get a little bit. I mean, if people just don't go sit outside and look at the dirt anymore, you know what I mean? If you go out in the middle of the field or whatever and you just sit down and you just start looking, if you look intently enough, you will just start to see thousands of creatures everywhere, little tiny things that look really weird and glowing bugs in the nighttime and, you know, fireflies and all those things really fascinate me, because you know, the bioluminescence that they create through chemical process. But, you know, the idea that a stupid little beetle that doesn't even have a brain or really a nervous system could hover via some sort of anti-gravity, it's just amazing that, you know, we're still trying to figure it out ourselves. And like, apparently we're starting to kind of go down that path, according to Alex, we're starting to figure that out. But we're an amazing
stuff. Yeah, it's I think we're always going to think we know a little bit more than we actually know. You know, as much technology we have, we can certainly do all these cool things. Learn, you know, I can go hop on the internet and, you know, become a Wikipedia expert, as some people like to call it. And, you know, we just read a bunch of stuff that I have instant access to. But I think there's still so many unknown things out there, like you mentioned. I mean, how many people do have the ability to? You know, I'm fortunate enough, I spend a lot of time in the Midwest and, you know, places to where there's lots of land, you know. Down here in Florida, you go to New York or someplace like that, there is no open land or grass to sit down in and see anything. So it's sitting down and seeing different types of, and I know this sounds ridiculous, but seeing different types of bugs and just actually seeing nature and it working in the process it's supposed to, kind of undisturbed, is something not very many people get to see. And I think there's a lack of appreciation for it over time. But I just want to let you know, we only got about 2 minutes left, so we'll have to wrap up here real quickly. And hopefully we can do a show here again this weekend. Ideally, I'd like to do one Sunday. I know it's Valentine's Day for everyone out there. So.
Oh, is it? I don't even know. I didn't even know that. Yeah, that's great. Okay.
Yeah, I just looking at my calendar. I remember I saw it on there. So.
Maybe
do a show then or on Monday. So we'll let you guys know out there. And again, thank you everyone who called in. lots of fun subjects we talked about, and hopefully everyone has a good weekend. I'll let Rodney take the floor.
Yeah, well, I've got a few minutes left. I just, like I said, I really the idea that you can go out and sit in the middle of the field and look down at some little tiny bug, and the idea that nobody else in the universe has seen that except for you. You know what I mean? The idea that you can look at, you can just walk out your door and go sit somewhere and look at some little thing, or dig a little hole in the ground and look at some little creature. You're the only person that has ever actually seen that little creature. It's just amazing to me that you can do that at any point in your life, any time of the day you want to do that. But, yeah, in the city of New York, I feel sorry for those people. They're just no wonder they're all on drugs and, you know, Ritalin and Paxil and Xanax and God knows how many other ones there are. But, you know, people would just sit down, take your shoes and your socks off, go outside, sit in the dirt, and let your feet touch the earth. And you can get the good vibrations going, and you can kind of relax, open your mind, get away from the cell phone signals and the microwaves and all this other hideous stuff. Just try it once. Just go out, just by yourself. You don't have to have some people with you. I prefer it, because really, when it comes down to it, I mean, that's the one thing we're going to miss the most when it's our time or when it's all over, where the earth blows up. You're going to go, yeah, there were so many things I missed and I didn't see. We spent too much time sitting indoors and being air conditioned and sitting on our computers that we miss out on all the stuff that's really, you know, unique about the earth. I mean, all the little insects and creatures that we have around here are all for us to learn from and for us to view and to you know, appreciate. And technology is great, but, you know, I mean, what happens when it gets to the point where we rely on the technology so much that when the power goes out, we just die because we can't get along anymore? I mean, that's one sort of scenario. Every time, I mean, I like, you know, reading universe books and things like that, where we talk about, you know, obviously it's happened about the earth several times before, where life has been wiped out. Why don't you think it's going to happen again? It eventually happened again. So, you know, appreciate the little things in life while you can. And, you know, we particularly like to talk about strange things and paranormal things, because that's the salt of life. That's the interesting stuff. I don't want to just talk about what movies we saw last week or what pizza you had last night or what girl you went, you know, I mean, that's just, you know, society stuff. It doesn't hold any water with me, but I prefer talking about things that we can't quantify completely. I feel that helps our brain out a little bit, so, you know.
Absolutely. And, yeah, we only got about 20, 30 seconds, so I just want to say, you know, I agree completely with what Rodney said. You know, we need to be more in touch with nature, and everyone go out there. Do it. Follow the man's orders, and I guarantee you'll feel a lot better. But everyone have a good weekend, and we'll go ahead and wrap this one up and call it a night. And good night,
Sunday,
everyone. Rodney, feel free to say goodbye.
Yeah, we'll do. Farewell, everyone, and we'll try to get a show on Sunday as well if we can. I know people are going to be out, you know, dating and being busy with their other things, but keep looking up, and we'll see you soon.